Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. Tonight we are on paper 40, section 6, which is old single column, page 447. Okay, we've been teasing this for a few weeks that we are inching ever closer and ever closer after 40 pages of the Revelation to the paper where they officially talk about us in the context of the cosmic system. And remember last time we basically got to us at the end of that previous section. They actually talked about mortals of adjuster fusion potential. Yeah, there we are, finally. But they, just sort of were setting the stage. They didn't get into a lot of the details yet. And the other thing to remember about last time, because they pick it up again right away when we start with this next section. It's very obvious that they're concerned about revealing something very definitive and profound about our nature to us, as immature and ignorant as we are, if nothing else because of the rebellion and the default. How little educated by the cosmos we are formally. They're concerned that it might go to our heads. And so they're trying to temper this a bit. Make sure that we have the appropriate humility in place before we really come to terms with just how transcendently profound it is what they're going to tell us about our nature and what we have merely by grace for the last 2,000 years. So, we're in a paper called The Ascending Sons of God, and, it's obvious that we are, apparently, in appropriately discussed in that paper. But you notice the section here is not entitled, now it's finally literally the sending mortals, or whatever. It's something called the Faith Sons of God. And, so what we'll see as we get into it, is sure enough, there's a little bit of humility just inherent in the fact of describing what we are as we are here and now. We actually are only technically in this paper entitled The Ascending Sons of God. Even that, in the 40th paper in the book, is a little too advanced a label to put on us yet. Okay, so let's get into that and see what they say. But you'll notice that they don't pound upon the humility like they did at the beginning of the last section. It's just a gentle reminder again, and then they start to get into some really interesting facts about our nature.
6. The Faith Sons of God. The mortal races stand as the representatives of the lowest order of intelligent and personal creation. You mortals are divinely beloved, and every one of you may choose to accept the certain destiny of a glorious experience. But you are not yet by nature of the divine order. You are wholly mortal. You will be reckoned as ascending sons the instant fusion takes place, but the status of the mortals of time and space is that of faith sons prior to the event of the final amalgamation of the surviving mortal soul with some type of eternal and immortal spirit.
Okay, so you see, it's basically just one sentence, or it's very direct. The first sentence. Step one is remind you of what you should pass through to get to the rest of the content in the section. The mortal races stand as the representatives of the lowest order of intelligent and personal creation. Now, we're not the lowest order of intelligent creation. There's all kinds of animals that are below us. But we are the lowest order of personal creation. And you can probably take that quite definitively, not just with an asterisk. Well, there's some beings that we couldn't reveal to you that are technically lower. I mean, that unrevealed order of angels, that lowest order of angels, I suspect is slightly, above us, but pretty close to eye level, in the same way that the secondary midwayers are, a little bit above us, but pretty close, to eye level. So it probably is literally, the case that we are not just quote-unquote the lowest, but the lowest.
That itself is humbling for a lot of people.
Right, that's very humbling. And it's, and it's in the context of it's not because of, the protoplasm that encases you, but actually you're quite transcendently divine, and you're only lowly because you haven't liberated yourselves from the shackles of this, which, is a common theology that a lot of people have. No, that profound thing that's within you is not part of you yet. As they're pointing out, it doesn't matter that you've had an adjuster since roughly age 6. You're not considered an ascending sun until you fuse with it. And the simple fact is, the only way that you can ascend is by spirit gravity grabbing a hold of that spirit fragment and pulling you up. And you're not a hold of it yet. So you can think about that. I mean, the fact that the adjuster remains with you, see, that adjuster is having to actively, resist being drawn up and out of you by spirit gravity. So, it's an active phenomenon that is lowering itself every nanosecond to stay within you as deep as it can get, which is only, relatively deep. It can only get down to the supreme level, which is what you get up to as a third circler. So there's a definite gap to start with, but we all know that's been bridged for the last 2,000 years for everyone by grace, by not so much the spirit of truth, quote unquote, but the other aspect of that spirit ministry, the spirit of unification, unifying, bridging that gap between the lowest descent of the adjuster against that upward pull of gravity, and where you start as a seventh circler, crossing that divide for you. The Master has done that for us so that we can all have one of these adjusters by grace. It's just, should be just a simple matter of time, unless you're really bent on iniquity, until you will be officially labeled an ascending sun. Just, all of us. We've all have that adjuster by grace. All right. You see how they didn't want to pound it. I mean, the second that they said the lowest, they said, you mortals are divinely beloved. See, so it's shifted gears a little bit. They're trying to be a little gentler and appreciative of our inadequacies and our insecurities, and remind us, you are the lowest, yes, but you are divinely beloved. And every one of you may choose. Okay, no qualifier that, some of you might be able to, every one of you, every one of us may choose. It's all in our hands. That fact of, so right now you're technically a faith son, and so that's encouraging, but you notice they end the paragraph if you're thinking precisely, with another little reminder of humility that we kind of touched on last time. So it says your faith sons prior to the event of the final amalgamation of the surviving mortal soul with some type of eternal and immortal spirit. Again, remember, it's not the you that's want right now that's wanting to survive that fuses. That mortal self is mortal. And technically, even the soul, the thing that actually will fuse, that other self, that copy of your higher self, has the potential to fuse and go on. You know, technically right now it's mortal also. It's potentially immortal, but that soul as well, even when it's resurrected and put in the Mirancha body as that Mirancha brain on the first mansion worlds, you know, you're still immortal, you know, as I pointed out last time. You need to be humble for a stretch here, you know. The only ones that are going to be fusing the moment they wake up on the first mansion world are those that are spirit fusers, like we were talking about last time, and that's none of us. We're, because of Pentecost and the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth, that's not in play anymore. You know, no matter how primitive some of us are biologically, we're all have the potential now to be adjuster fusers. And so we will be mortal until fusion, in terms of a technical fact. All right. What else do they say?
It is a solemn and supernal fact that such lowly and material creatures as Urantia human beings are the sons of God, faith children of the highest. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us that we should be called the sons of God. As many as received him, to them gave he the power to recognize that they are the sons of God. While it does not yet appear what you shall be, even now you are the faith sons of God. For you have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of sonship, whereby you cry, Our Father. Spoke the prophet of old in the name of the eternal God. Even to them will I give in my house a place and a name better than sons. I will give them an everlasting name, one that shall not be cut off. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the spirit of his son into your hearts.
Okay. So, remember, if you flip to the end, you know, who wrote this? A mighty messenger wrote this, you know, a one-time mortal. And I'm sure he had a lot of fun identifying with what we do, or what we've done as lowly mortals, in putting together the Bible and being able to take a hold of that text and pick out a sequence of quotations to tell his little story here. It's a very, very clever sequence that he pulled out and has tweaked a little bit to make his point. Now, remember how this works. This is a good opportunity to remind everyone of how this works. When you have a Bible quote, you know, literally something in quotes in the book, it's almost never verbatim out of any translation. They're always tweaking at least a word, almost always. Mostly what they're doing is taking the King James Version. And, you know, if they're going to quote it pretty directly without modifying it, you know, to any large degree, I mean, they'll update the language so you don't have, you know, literal King James English, you know, with these and thous and what have you. So they'll modify those words. But otherwise, you know, they'll just use it straight. And, think about when this was done. I mean, even though you had the American Standard Version in place in 1906, still the King James Version, you know, even today, you know, is upheld by many. And it's very interesting that some of the things that have changed subsequent to the King James, it even changed going to the American Standard. The Revelators chose not to make that change. They wanted to use an older way of expressing, because they're not really quoting the Bible. You know, they're doing what they're all what they're supposed to do always. If they can find any words that any human has ever written that express what they want to express, they are not allowed to pen their own sequence of words independently. They must use a human sequence to, you know, as if at all possible. It's not just part four that's like that. The whole book is like that. Now, obviously, there's not going to be a lot of human sequences of words about very transcendent, you know, things that we don't know anything about. But they're going to, you know, they don't, you know, really care if an old version of the Bible has been, you know, a particular way it was translated has been discovered to be not a proper translation anymore or something. You know, if it's a sequence of words that works, they use it. Okay? Because they're not trying to give us facts. They're not trying to reveal to us exactly what it said in Hebrew and how that should be properly translated to English. That's irrelevant. Okay? They're trying to reveal truth. Okay? So, you know, you basically have, these are, you know, basically straight out of the King James. And then they've just tweaked it a little bit. And let's notice a little, some of the details of what they've done here in tweaking it. So it starts out, that first one, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God." Okay, so that's from that, what we now know to be from the Revelation, that cover letter to the Gospel of John, that first epistle of John. So they start out, they're starting out using the words of John. You know, with that one from that cover letter, the first epistle, John, followed by one you probably recognize if you're familiar with how the Gospel of John starts out. You know, they love to use those soaring poetic passages from that first chapter in John. You know, and so, "As many as received him, to them gave he..." And then if you know that, you'll go, wait a minute, that's been tweaked. I remember it saying, "As many as received him, to them gave he the power to..." Does anyone remember?
Become
the sons of God. Yes. Huh. Look at what they did there. Do they want... Think about that more truthfully. The power to become the sons of God. Is that true? No. No. You're not a creator being. You haven't been given the power to become sons of God. You're a son of God by grace alone. Okay? That's not something that you can do. You haven't been given that power. So they need to tweak that. You've been given the power to recognize that you are a son of God, but not the power to become one. You know, and sort of just building upon that, I'm not a creator, I'm a creature, I'm humble. You know, is man cannot cause growth. Period. Right? Again, you know, in that same spirit, you know, why you'd want to change that from become to recognize that they are. Okay, yeah, Gene first. Yeah.
The other change in most of these is the use here of sons, where in the Bible it would say children. Especially when Peter was speaking.
Okay. Well, that's one of the reasons I pointed out. A lot of times they're going to use the King James because it will say sons, instead of a more modern one that'll say children. That's one you know, thing you'll see in contrast. A lot of times, even before very very modern ones, where there's kind of an agenda, you know, to make it gender neutral. You know.
Is it possible that some of these King James versions are not all written the same?
No, I mean, the King James version is pretty much the King James version, but there are, you know, just, you know, that's something that you can kind of notice. I mean, some...
It's not cool to say sons without saying daughters. You know?
Well, we'll get that in a second here, but you know, if there are times when the King James might say children, and they'll change it to sons. But there's other times where the King James does say sons, and more modern ones say children. I mean, they're always going to tweak it. But, you know, you can be guaranteed that it's much more likely that if they'd like it to say sons, it probably already has that in the King James, and it's, you know, not in a more modern one. Now, that's definitely a tendency. Yeah. Now, that was, did you have something that you wanted to bring
well,
in, John?
You know, I noticed they go back and forth a little bit here between, you know, the fact that we're a son and versus the difference between being a son and a face son. And I'm wondering if that's to make us think that, you know, yeah, you're not necessarily technically a, you know, a fused son of God yet, but, and you are a faith son, but, however, you can, you know, have complete faith that you will be, you know, so you can sort of have a concept that you are a son of God, even though you're not really, you haven't earned it yet, but, you know, in fact, unless you seriously, honestly, you know, don't choose to be, you will get there, so to speak. And I just notice they go back and forth, like the very first sentence starts out that, you know, the fact that such lowly creatures are, after the paragraph before and everything, and you mentioned that a couple of times.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, this is part of what he's specifically doing with these passages. He's taking a set of passages where you can, if you interpret the sons of God line as being the faith sons of God, then they are directly factual. Okay? Remember that, you know, what he's doing here. In the context of a section entitled The Faith Sons of God, he wants to show you how you can take a sequence of passages and interpret it to non-delusionally, directly, you know, as the faith sons. And, you know, so even though, you know, they didn't modify it, that's what they want you to read in. You know, he's saying, think of each of those as being talking about faith sons, and then you can take it directly without any asterisk. Okay. That's really the biggest tweak that they did to that line in, you know, in the first chapter of John, is to change it to recognize like that. Okay, because that was, it's like, okay, no, that can't be said. We can't validate that because that's has way too much delusional potential that we want to try to help humans with. Okay, and then they flip around, and again it says, while, and then it does not yet appear what you shall be. Okay, again, coming from the cover letter from the first epistle of John, and just right, you know, right there with the previous one. And look at, and he's saying, now he says, think about that. It's like, they're directly talking about faith sons with a hint of there's some modification of that adjective in your future. But we're not certain of that yet. Well, you're certain now. It's just been told you in the previous paragraph that you will become an ascending son, even, you know, from now being a faith son. So that it does not yet appear what you shall be, that has been resolved. As we just read the previous paragraph, that statement that John made 2,000 years ago has finally been resolved. It has now been made clear what you shall be. You shall be ascending sons. See, so she's showing you how you can take a sequence, and if you look at it in truth, it can come alive. You know, you can take it out of its, you know, it's really its death. Of 2,000 years ago, and make it a living text again. You know, you can find truth in it, not just a sequence of words, just facts. Yep.
Also, Chris, I wanted the phrase right before that you first went over, recognize that they are the sons of God. Another, could it be another interpretation too, added on to what you were saying, that they didn't have the universe, when John wrote this, he wasn't aware of the universal bestowal of the thought adjustment. You know, I mean, he's recalling back before the, well, I don't know where, what he's recalling, but, you know, it wasn't a given that they were sons of God. You know, now we do recognize that we are sons of God because of the universal bestowal of the justice.
Right, but see, again, you know, notice we haven't, you know, we don't want to bring in the adjusters. You know, we just want to appreciate, if nothing else, just because we have a personality. You know, remember how this started. Lowest order of the intelligent and personal creation. You don't need an adjuster to be a personal creation. You know, so just they're just trying to get us to appreciate the basics, and there's a they're trying to point out that there's a spirit of recognition in what those guys wrote so long ago. Doesn't matter what they were thinking consciously, what rationalization scheme they had in their head, that's really irrelevant. It's just you can notice, like, huh, but even if they didn't recognize, I can recognize a thread of truth that flows through their words. I might have to tweak a couple things, but it's there, you know, to recognize that you are, not you will be, the ascending sons of God, that you are faith sons of God right now, to recognize that you are that. And the strength of that, don't believe that you are. That's the fourth epical revelation.
Trust.
Recognize that you are. That's the fifth. Take delight in cultivating the cosmic consciousness that can actually recognize that, not just merely believe it, and then have that belief fall short when times get tough. If you recognize, it'll be there for you when you need it, that spiritual strength, that grip. Belief is very flimsy, okay? A genuine faith grasp, a genuine recognition is rock solid, okay? So, and then, you know, if you're familiar all with the New Testament, you can just feel when he transitions from using John to Paul. You know, even now, you are the faith sons of God. It's like, that feels like Paul. Well, it is Paul. Okay, now we've, you know, and remember with Paul, Paul has some much deeper insight because he, you know, he actually had some adjuster assistance to see some things, you know, and you know, he appreciated basically the existence of the adjuster, and you know, so you'll get a little bit more focused thoughts out of Paul at times, more directly to the point. Even now, you are the faith sons of God, in Galatians there. And especially when it goes to the next one, then you know it's Paul, because, I mean, only Paul strings together words that sound like that. For you have not received the spirit of bondage, again to fear, but you have received the spirit of sonship, whereby you cry, Our Father. Okay, so now we're in Romans. We're right before that line where he basically tells you about your adjuster. The next verse is Romans 8:16, where he tells about the adjuster. You know, that your spirit will testify with, you know, or the spirit will testify with your spirit that you are a child of God. You know, that's the next verse, right? Now notice what they did. If you're familiar with these kind of passages like here in Romans, you know, where they have Our Father, do you know what it always says in the Bible? You know, that quote-unquote thing, you know, you see how they have quotes within the quotes there. What's that inner quote thing? How's that usually stated in the Bible? Does anyone know? There's an Aramaic word that precedes the word Father instead of Our. Abba Father, yes. All right, Abba Father is what you'll see in the Bible there. And you know, Abba is just Aramaic for Father, but it's a very sort of familiar, you know, like daddy, more like. See, the point of that, it's like, well, why does it say Father, Father? It's trying to personalize Father, so not abstractly and remotely, okay, but see, make it personal. And so they're just, see, they're doing that in another way. Our Father, like Our Father who art in heaven, right? Like that. See, so there's an example. See, if it's like, you know, it's like, guys, no, just, you know, let go of the Aramaic and, you know, translate it in a that proper personal way. Okay, spoke the prophet of old. Well, this is Isaiah. That's the prophet of old. And it's in chapter 56. So it's in the, you know, the book of Isaiah has broken into three blocks. The first block is first Isaiah. The second block is second Isaiah, and the third block is the two of them, you know, together, mixed together. So I can't say just offhand if this is first or second Isaiah because it's in the third block. But either way, even to them will I give in my house a place and a name better than sons. I will give them an everlasting name, one that shall not be cut off. Okay, they're going, now think about it, you who know the fifth epoch of Revelation. Think about what Isaiah said. Huh, that's spot on accurate. When do you actually get a permanent name? When you fuse. A name that shall not be cut off. The name you've got right now is going to be cut off. Right now you're known by your adjuster number because you're just an unfertilized egg.
You can remember that,
right? Right now we're just a number, okay? Until you fuse with your adjuster, then and only then. Because, it means you're part of eternity, okay? The name is relative to you being part of eternity. And so until you are, you don't have a name. See, so just look at that, how you can see that come alive with precision. Huh. Now, clear back there, one of those Isaiahs said it just perfect. You know, I mean, I will give in my house a place, right? You know, the mansion worlds and the Mirage worlds beyond that, and a name. Now here, though, there's a modification, and it's a very interesting one. In Isaiah, it says, and a name better than sons and daughters. It says sons and daughters in Isaiah. All right, so here's where, we have to remind ourselves, like we did a few sessions back as we started reading this, to not think anthropomorphically and simplistically about the use of the language. By son, they don't mean male. Okay. By son, they mean child in your relationship to the father. Now, if you just said child, like we were talking about earlier, it's like, well, are they not saying son purposely, so I don't think of relationship to the father, but I think relationship to the mother, like the Revelators do, or what? The son makes the designation specific. Your relationship to the father. Father has a son, an ascending son, whether or not we start out male or female. That personality the father gave us is not male or female. Okay? And so, to not attach inappropriate baggage to father or mother, or son or daughter. I mean, even when you say angels are daughters of God, don't attach human baggage, that doesn't mean they're girls. It doesn't mean they're females. It means they're called daughters because they're the offspring of a mother, purely. And they're trying to remind you of that just by using that, that designation, calling them her, using that pronoun. So to challenge yourself, even though that's very hard, to let go of the baggage. And see, and here's, it just really comes to a point. The gender neutrality was right there in Isaiah, and they snipped it off. It's like, no, we're not talking about some anthropomorphic delusion about you. We're talking about it, the genuine fact. We're not faith daughters, because the faith thing is tied to the Father. Okay, and that's what the word son means. So they just limited it to. Better than sons there. And then a little bit more from Galatians. Again, Paul chiming in. And because you are sons, okay, so now think about what that, he's wanting you to think precisely about this. Okay, because you are a faith son, because that is in place, what's possible? What can be built upon that foundation? Because you're a faith son, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into your hearts. And you're going, well, wait a minute. No, it's a spirit. It's a Father fragment. It's a Spirit fragment of the Father. What are they doing there? In a Bible translation, most likely, the word Spirit will be capitalized, because, of course, the translators are always trying to rationalize everything into the Trinity of Christendom. And so if there's a quote-unquote spirit, being invoked, it must be that third person of the Trinity, and so they'll capitalize it. That's one of the reasons why they have such a hard time with Romans 8:16, because you've got two spirits. So, they have to really rationalize mightily to try to figure out what that lowercase s spirit is in that one. But here they purposely didn't leave it like, it is there in the Bible capitalized. They made it lowercase. You're going, well, okay. I mean, if I saw a capital S spirit of the Son, I mean, I would be thinking spirit of truth. Right? What might I think if I changed the capital to a small s? I pointed to it earlier. That spirit ministry, literally functioning as a spirit of truth. Now that's a very advanced fact. In order for it to engage you, in fact, as the spirit of truth, you have to have an upper domain of the hourglass, a higher domain of mind that is truth-like, that there can be a resonance with that. It's not the spirit of truth aspect of that spirit ministry that bridges the gap between you as a seventh circler and that lowest, penetration of the adjuster down from infinity. It's that spirit of unification, that more just factual, foundational aspect, that's directly there. Remember, the literal spirit substance that's engaging you is not from the Creator Son, the Master Son. It's the reflective mother, or the creative mother spirit's spirit substrate. And so that spirit of unification, that actual spirit energy that can be down there at a lowly level, that is going to bridge that gap, is sort of just like factually the spirit part, like we use lowercase s spirit in the Revelation to talk about spirit substance. It's that right there with the substance part, the substrate part of that ministry, that spirit of unification. See, that's what they're referring to there. And it's into your hearts. The adjuster is going to be in your heart, in that upper domain of the hourglass, the temple within. But think about how it is that adjuster could be there. Especially when you are in a third circler, where you've basically made that upper domain of the hourglass adjuster-like. There has to be something that penetrates down in and prepares the way. Something that spiritualizes that mind energy in the upper domain and provides a conduit for that adjuster to come down through. See, that's that spirit of unification. And that can come, the actual spirit level is above the upper domain. It's above your mind. So what can be brought down more in relationship to you as the lowest order of intelligent and personal creation? Well, there would have to be some fact that acquired that nature and then could bestow that. Michael possesses a nature that goes down below that spirit level above human minds. He is Jesus still. He is that nature all the way down to the bottom of the lower domain of the hourglass. Okay? See, so he can... That's why there can be this spirit of unification. There can be a downstepping mechanism that can come down into the heart and prepare the way so that the adjuster can come down in. So that's what they're technically referring to. And so they're pointing out, the set adjusters aside, just try to think about all the precursor facts and how if you carefully pick a sequence of Bible passages, maybe tweak a word or two, you've got something, if you think about it precisely, tells what they want to say, what this mighty messenger wants to say, referring you to the details of the spirit of unification and everything. So that's a pretty masterly little construct on his part, to pick and choose like that. Yep.
He's saying spirit of unification.
Right.
What is that?
Another name for the spirit of truth. Oh. Okay, you look on the chart. Threefold actuality is unity. Here's the spirit of truth. And what's the
unification?
Spirit of unification is an alternate designation. You know, those alternate designations for each of the adjutants and the spirit of truth are a reminder of what the sort of more foundational aspect is of that ministry, as opposed to sort of the fully personal upper domains of that ministry. What's if you take the let's take one like what'd be a good one? Let's see, how about the third adjutant? That's a pretty good one. Take the spirit of courage. Okay, as an upper level fact in a full personalized mode, that adjutant's the spirit of courage. But it's certainly not the spirit of anything. You know, for a dog, it's not a spiritual phenomenon. You know, so what is that adjutant in its foundational nature? It's just energy nature, the energy that's upon which that spiritualized nature can rest. Now, it's the energy of loyalty. And a dog can be loyal, but a dog can't be courageous, because it's not a person. Only persons can be courageous. You know, if you say an animal is courageous, you're anthropomorphizing the animal. They technically can't be courageous. You know, they don't have the objective consciousness to think what you're thinking when you're properly using the word courage. And see, so it's the same thing, with the spirit of unification. That's that foundational nature. And that's basically all of that spirit ministry that most of us have used, as they tell us back there in paper 34, is that foundational part, the spirit of unification part. Because it's sad to record that so few persons on Urantia have taken delight in cultivating the kind of mind that actually can interface with the upper parts of that spirit ministry, the truth part. You have to have three levels of truth in the upper domain in order to synchronize with the spirit of truth part. You have to not only know the truth on the fourth level of meaning, but you have to obey the truth on the fifth level of meaning, and you have to think the truth on the sixth level of meaning. You have to have all three, because only those three together, personality encompassing them, actually synchronizes with this spirit of truth ministry that's in the personality block. The threefold actuality with unity block, you know, the triunity block. So, you know, they remind you in paper 34, by and large, the spirit of truth is twiddling its thumbs, waiting for something to happen on this planet, because it's sad to record that there's no one asking for it yet. Okay? Everyone got the unification part and the adjuster by grace, but the truth thing, it's waiting patiently for someone to challenge it, to catalyze your mind. What is thinking the truth on the sixth level of meaning? You know, they define that in the Revelation. That means to philosophize, in the true sense of philosophy. And not only does it mean to philosophize, but that's what it means to truly worship. Like the masters of philosophy teach you on the Isle of Paradise how to truly worship. They teach you how to think the truth. Right? You know, to be something that the spirit of truth can help.
It's like making your prayer is sublime thinking. Worship is, I forget what it is.
Super thinking,
yeah. So that philosophy comes before the worst conductors of worship, the masters of philosophy, because what it does, it perfects your thinking, your sublime thinking.
Right, the conductors of worship just conduct worship. They don't teach you how to worship.
Right.
You have to know how to worship first before they can conduct it. The masters of philosophy teach you how to worship. They teach you how to think the truth in relationship to the absolute existential level.
Because those are the strands that connect the divergence of reality.
You have to synchronize with those three beings in eternity. The only gateway you have to eternity is the truths of eternity. No amount of facts of time get you there. Only the truths of eternity provide that means to resonate with them. You have to be taught how to think the truths of eternity on an absolute existential level to engage them, those three absolute persons, those three absolute existential persons. Yeah.
So let's go back to, this is kind of interesting. So you mentioned a second ago they're waiting for something to happen on this planet for people to start thinking that way.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to be thinking that way eternal, and you know, yet, you know, until we get a lot further along and evolve the whole lot of what you're just talking about. So what are some of the keys that you can do as a lowly mortal here on Earth in the state that we're in to be mm-hmm. able to cultivate that kind of thinking? Mm-hmm. Maybe some an example or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's, and maybe it's happening unconsciously. I don't know. As you continue to get more and more involved in understanding the revelation and starting to, you know, put it to practice in a day-by-day basis. But
yeah.
Are there any tricks of the trade?
Sure. Yeah, so if you saw you on the webinar, he's wondering about, you know, is there some way you can foster that, you know, that's cultivate, you know, as I've been saying. You know, how can you foster that? I mean, and you know, is it something that we should even reasonably think we can achieve here? Okay, two things to keep in mind. One is, we are quivering on the very brink. You know, it's a possibility that if we go the positive direction of the brink we're quivering on, you know, that we might begin to enter the next stage where this, what people will be striving for is quality of thinking. Remember that sentence? Quality of thinking. Quality of thinking will get you resonance with the spirit of truth. You need quality of thinking, not quantity of thinking. You know, and that's why one of the things that's really sad to record, these people that have really vast raw intellects on our planet, there's no culture that encourages them to augment their raw quantity of thinking ability with quality. You don't get promoted to, you know, a tenured professor, you know, you don't get accolades, you know, amongst your peers for quality of thinking. You get advanced like that because of quantity of thinking. They count how many papers you publish. Doesn't matter if every word is drivel. As long as you have X number of papers, they'll keep moving you along the line. It's all about quantity of thinking. You know, and our whole culture is, you know, how many gizmos do you own? And right, it's all about quantity. But we're quivering on the very brink where we could be moving to striving for quality instead of mere quantity. Okay, if you just attempt to bring quality into the midst of your quantity, that's supplying favorable conditions where maybe the spirit of truth could start to have something to resonate with. And as I said before, the simple thing they tell you in paper 16, section 6, that really fosters, catalyzes, energizes, whatever word you want to use, this transition to using the upper domain of the hourglass instead of the lower, merely the lower domain. You know, using more and more of the lower domain, having more and more quantity of thinking. But actually using the upper domain, having quality of thinking. They tell you all you have to do is reflect to begin to make that transition. So that everything you do, instead of just thinking your way through it, you know, head down, running full tilt, pull back on the reins. So let me pause for a second, let me pull back. Now let me, you know, often say, let me think about this. But what you really mean, you know, because you pull back on the reins, it's like, no, let me reflect upon this. Let me see if I can see the big picture of this, rather than trying to forge my way through by brute force. Why don't I step back and see if I assess the big picture here? Okay, if every time you do that, you're supplying the favorable conditions for subsequently there to be a little more quality in your quantity. Every time you reflect, the adjuster and all of the other spiritual ministries won't miss one nanosecond. If you reflect for one nanosecond, they'll grow you a little bit. But they can't grow you unless you reflect. That's opening the door. All that thinking has no survival value. It doesn't lead to any growth. You have to reflect. That opens up the door. And quality is innate in what God gives you. Yeah. So that's the key. You know, just having the patience and the humility to pull back on the reins. And And then just remembering that God promised that if you just do that one simple thing, he'll take care of all the rest, all the physics of mind energy and related to spirit energy and all this stuff. Yeah, he'll take care of all those details. You don't have to sort that out. Just let him, you know, do what he wants to do. And of course, you know, technically how he does what he wants to do is with her. She's the one that actually touches your mind, you know, and grows you. All right, so, and seeing it all, I mean, that really brings us right back around. See, it's all about, you know, see, purposely picked that passage from Paul because of what he said with the precision. Into your hearts, the upper domain of the hourglass. Not the second level of meaning, not the level of the feelings, not what most people think heart refers to. No. Several levels up from that, okay? At least four instead of two, okay? Get in the temple. Know the truth. Obey the truth. Think the truth. Logical acumen, moral discriminations, genuine spiritual insight. Okay. All right.
Stuff that means something.
Something that the adjuster can do something with. Something that has survival value. There's lots of quantity out in the external world. They don't need you to add to it, but they would love to have you augment the quality in the universe. All right, let's read a little more here.
All evolutionary worlds of moral habitation harbor these divine faith sons of God, sons of grace and mercy, mortal beings belonging to the divine family and accordingly called the sons of God. Your Rancho mortals are entitled to regard themselves as being the sons of God because...
And before you go, did you just transfer the word divine up into that verse line? Isn't it harbor these faith sons of God? Isn't it just...
Did I say divine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a typo and that you were transferring it up there. Yeah.
Because divine.
Yeah, yeah, they're right next to each other, so you transferred it up, yeah. Okay, so... So all evolutionary worlds of mortal habitation harbor these faith sons of God, sons of grace and mercy. All right, see, so again, you know, think about the sweeping, the, you know, the universality of that statement. They want you to actually take stock in the profound fact of being a faith son. Before you get all excited about, you know, having an adjuster and trying to become a first circler and all that, do step one first. If you do step one well, step two will go better. Okay? You know, it is a solemn and supernal fact, okay, as it's set up in the beginning of that previous paragraph, that such lowly and material creatures as the Urantia human beings are the sons of God, faith children of the highest. Especially when you have the fifth epical revelation, there's such an immediate tendency to just blow through that fact. That solemn and supernal fact, that you're a profound fact, completely independent of having an adjuster. You haven't even remotely begun to use what you have without an adjuster, and you're expecting to be using the adjuster? Yeah. You have to use what you have first because it's the gateway to get to the adjuster. The adjuster is an advanced level phenomenon, okay? Now, if you haven't really taken hold of that solemn and supernal fact of being a faith son, the adjuster is twiddling its thumbs. Okay, I mean, there's nothing for it to do there. Because again, there's all, that's why I said they're trying to point out there's these ways to what you desire, especially in the wake of the revelation, the things they've disclosed to you. You have to know the way to that thing, that destiny point that you desire. Don't try to somehow magically jump over it. You know, and so all these worlds, you know, that don't have a universal bestowal of adjusters, even primitive worlds, whatnot, all evolutionary worlds of mortal habitation harbor these faith sons of God, sons of grace and mercy. And mortal beings belonging to the divine family. You know, the divine word is appropriate. You're not just divine because, you know, you have an adjuster and maybe you'll fuse with it one day. So, you know, just to, they're trying to get you to, you know, see, and they're going to, you know, really try to drive this home about giving you a set of bullet points, purposely putting the one that you're really intrigued by last. Okay? Trying to get you to think about something besides adjuster, 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 adjuster. Okay? There's so many profound things in play that are worth appreciating and taking delight in cultivating, you know, the factualization of.
Yeah. I remind myself of Jesus constantly say when he was growing up, to have a talk with my father who is in heaven. So, you know, if that's where he started right up here, you know,
yeah.
I think a lot of readers, they tend to just,
yeah, he wasn't having a talk with his father who was in his mind.
Right.
He was having a talk with his father who was in heaven. He's just starting out as a faith son of God, right, knowing all he has is that little upward faith grasp, and he's going to exercise it. Step one. All right, so let's see what they have here.
One, you are sons of spiritual promise, faith sons. You have accepted the status of sonship. You believe in the reality of your sonship, and thus does your sonship with God become eternally real.
Okay. Have you done that? Not because you're have an adjuster, just as a faith son, purely. Have you accepted the status of sonship? Notice what they say, you believe in the reality of your sonship, not the potentiality of your sonship, you know, ascending sonship, or even the actuality of your being a faith son. No, the reality of your sonship as a faith son. Have you gone up from potentiality through actuality to reality? You believe in the reality of your sonship, and thus does your sonship with God become eternally real. You know, if you only believe in the actuality of it, you haven't connected it to eternity yet. You have to connect it to eternity. Your mind can believe in the actuality of it, but only your personality can realityize it. Connect it to eternity. You know, it came from eternity, so it can connect you back in spirit to that eternity. You've got to do that. You've got to get to the point where at least there's that initial little faint flicker of using the upper domain of the hourglass. You know, don't just believe with the lower domain, with your agitated mind, no matter how fervent that belief is. Okay? That's just an actuality. It's just a quantity. You need to make it a quality, make it a reality. Go beyond mere belief. Genuine faith grasp, which can only be done in the upper domain. Yeah.
Is that the transition from faith to trust?
Well, I mean, if you actually do that, you are you're making that transition from a mere sort of just pure, unconscious, by grace, faith, to the first measures of living faith. So you're really living if you're using the upper domain. See, really, again, see, the eternally real, reality, you know, remember the technical term. If you get yourself really living, you know, where it's a conscious use of your personality.
Trust.
Okay, that living faith is what matures into trust, just naturally, yes. All right, that's, you know, the mere sort of faith purely by grace that is just nothing but an antidote for fear, it's not living. You know, it's just got this white knuckle, you know, frozen grip on fear. You know, you've got to let go of it, so that it can become living and evolve into trust, mature into trust. Okay, see, so think about the order that they've put them in here. That's step one, not the adjuster. You know, the adjuster is the last step. They're trying to give you a way to build up. So that's become really living. Okay, what's next?
Two, a creator son of God became one of you. He is your elder brother in fact, And if in spirit you become truly related brothers of Christ, the victorious Michael, then in spirit must you also be sons of that Father which you have in common, even the universal Father of all.
Okay, so saying, now, relative to a lot of evolutionary worlds, you've got a step two here that can augment step one. Basically, you know, just step one on steroids is step two. What we were talking about before, what because of what Michael did and the fact that he's bestowed that spirit ministry on you, it augments your ability to do step one, to have even your initial very limited efforts be effective. Okay, because he's bridged that gap as the spirit of unification, and even the tiniest little bit of work on the bottom end will get amplified by the adjuster on the other end of that linkage. So, really identifying with, see, and here they're playing off of Paul. I mean, if you think about what they're saying there, this is very Paul-like. It's what you'll see if you go to where Paul is saying, you are the faithful sons of God there. They've actually reworked that a little bit. He's got Christ in that sentence. Okay? And see, and they're bringing that back in here. It's like, well, okay, you mean just, the Christ that all Christians believe in, the atonement doctrine Christ? Is that what you mean? No, they defined it here. By Christ, they want you to interpret that to mean the victorious Michael. Right? And what is Christ? You remember what Christ means literally as a word?
United one.
Yeah, united, yes. Right. It's just like the word Messiah. In Hebrew, it means the anointed, right? And so, like when they say Christ Michael, Michael's a question, literally, who is like God? And if you say Christ Michael, you answer the question, who's like God? The anointed one. Right? So, see that in that sense, of he who embodies what you would like to work your way up through, seventh circular, sixth circular, fifth circular, fourth circular, third circular, second circular, first circular, synchronizer, up to fusion. The whole hierarchy embodies that. That stairway to the adjuster has been prepared by him, and it's there to be utilized in that spirit of unification to amplify your efforts of really taking a hold of being a faithful son. See, so they're saying, it sounds quite Christian if you think about that bullet number two. It's a very Christian sounding statement. They're saying, yeah, they've got a thought there. Just make it a little less, mystical and mere belief. Think of it more literally and concretely and then go with it.
Which prejudice society.
Right. He can really help to get this face on fact going. Yep.
It just seems to me, what you just emphasized, that this is very Christian oriented. To me, it also sounds very divinely fraternal deity, the Son. it's talking about sonship here, And that kind of spreading out the divinely fraternal deity, the brotherhood, fraternal.
Right. He's going to help you to be part of the cosmic system.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Right. And that cosmic fraternity, exactly. See, that's what they're trying to stress. Think about it literally, not just, as sort of doctrinal boilerplate. Okay.
3. You are sons because the spirit of a son has been poured out upon you, has been freely and certainly bestowed upon all your Urantia races. This spirit ever draws you toward the divine son, who is its source, and toward the paradise father, who is the source of that divine son.
They're adding, one other little element. Remember how I said, that spirit of unification part, you see the lowercase s spirit of the son, of a son, see again. That's right there more literally with the spirit substance substrate of that ministry. They're reminding you, remember, The actual anchor point for spirit gravity is the eternal sun. And a crater sun is a downstepped expression of that. So in a local universe, there's a local spirit gravity center. Now, first you're drawn to that center, and through that center, then you're drawn to the eternal sun. Now, you can't get to there except through me, right? So they're reminding you, think about just this whole issue of trying to, you know, let spirit gravity help with this, pulling you up. You don't have to actually get up there and fuse with the adjuster to start to feel the benefit of spirit gravity. That's another thing that he's given you, you know, at Pentecost. You can get some real significant spirit gravity even as a seventh circler because there's his spirit gravity and then through him to the Father. And see, so here, see, one, two, three, see, it's still all just faith, son, and what you could do with the spirit of unification. There's no spirit of truth, there's no thought adjuster, just the basic spirit facts. Okay? And you're a gift to take a hold of those basic spirit facts, that spirit gripping mechanism, your personality. It's a spirit pattern, remember? And so that's all that's in play, and it's very powerful. All right?
Four. Of his divine free willness, the universal Father has given you your creature personalities. You have been endowed with a measure of that divine spontaneity of free will action, which God shares with all who may become his sons.
See what they did? I mean, we were kind of talking about the technical details, and then the whole point is, yeah, use that personality to engage those technical details. So actually, see, it's all. One, two, three, four. It's all what you should be focusing on first. What a humble, you know, one who recognizes that they are a faith son of God, as the modified John up there. Just start with that and use that in a full way. And they're hoping that they're humble enough, that you're humble enough, that they can throw in. You notice they've thrown in the word divine a couple times. They did it again. You know, it was in there three times, you know, when you added it in even. you know, that's a dicey word. Because one of the real problems about saying that you're, you know, that getting us to recognize that there's this thing called personality, and that the thing we've always called personality is actually not, it's just the temperament of ourself. That there's this actually very high fact called personality, comes directly from the Father that you're given, that can go to your head. You know, it is divine, but its divinity is only as a potentiality. It's not a divine actuality, it's a divine potentiality. But they want you to know, you know, that it's divine. They're hoping it won't go to your head and thinking, well, yeah, I've got a divine personality. You know, I'm already a first circler.
I'm coming up here too.
I mean, it's a very easy thing to think, to forget about that difference between potential and actual. Okay. But if you can humbly apply that divine adjective to potentiality, it should give you great confidence, you know, that nothing can stop you. Your potential is divine. I mean, you're going to have to do the opposite of full-on divinity to stop that potential from actualizing. Yeah. That should give you a lot of confidence that all of the little things that you might worry about, oh man, did that just cut me off from God? I mean, is this it? Did I just screw it up, you know, eternally? It's like, no. I mean, did you actually transcend the divinity of the potential that was given to you? Have you gone over the Father's head divinity-wise in a negative sense? Really? Because you violated that taboo? It should give you, you know, should eliminate a lot of that unnecessary worry that we plague ourselves with. If you can stay humble and not start, you know, thinking, wait a minute, I think I am God already. Anyway, all right, but there it is finally, number five. Now we get the zinger.
Five, there dwells within you a fragment of the universal Father, and you are thus directly related to the divine Father of all the sons of God.
So that is in fact true. And as long as you appreciate that in humility, it's fine. But, you know, see, they're not mentioning we're directly related. See, all those, just notice how if you weren't humble, you know, you could run away with those inappropriately. All right, so there's the faith, Son of God. Now they're going to actually get into, we know we have these three different groups. You know, if you remember, you flip back to the beginning of the paper, they said we had these seven categories, and the first three were Father-fused mortals, Son-fused mortals, Spirit-fused mortals, and it's like, when are we finally going to get to those actual section titles? Okay, well, here they are finally. So the Father-fused mortals, they're going to finally give us some more of the specifics. So let's just, without any further ado, let's jump in.
Seven, Father-fused mortals. The sending of adjusters, their indwelling, is indeed one of the unfathomable mysteries of God the Father. These fragments of the divine nature of the universal Father carry with them the potential of creature immortality. Adjusters are immortal spirits, and union with them confers eternal life upon the soul of the fused mortal.
Okay, we all know they're called the mystery of mysteries. As another way of saying the unfathomable mysteries, one of the unfathomable mysteries. One little thing to notice there. I point this out all the time. They never miss an opportunity to potentialize their statements for more advanced interpretation. So you have directly in there, these fragments are the divine nature of the universal, these fragments of the divine nature of the universal Father. Okay, so that's the beginning idea. You know, when all you have is just that individual that you're calling the universal Father, and you don't have some complex deity picture to understand this in, you know, that's how you think of it. You think of it as a fragment from that individual. Okay, now we know technically it's not. I mean, an actual personalized, you know, personality encompassed individual at that high a level is not breakable. That's full on indivisibility when you think about that individual. You know, nothing can, you know, no one has a big enough rock hammer to knock off a chunk of that and toss it to you. Okay, it's fully indivisible. To understand how there can be this fragment coming from the Father, you have to look at it from the unity viewpoint, in the deity perspective. See, and that's why they threw in the God the Father. Right? Because technically, you've got six facets of deity that go in to make the deity that's called the Father. One of those facets is the infinite upholder. It's actually that facet of deity that's fragmented. See, so it's there, you know, but you're not forced to try to, you know, think about that initially, because they know an initial reader can't. But they, you know, they didn't want to just have the universal Father when they're all alone. It's like, well, I guess I have to give up on my understanding and the deity viewpoint. You know, you go, oh, I see, there. That's the on-ramp sentence, and the other one is, and that's the way they do it. So you got to properly interpret it. Okay, and once again, you know, they did this at the beginning before. Adjusters are immortal spirits, and union with them confers eternal life upon the soul of the fused mortal. So you notice how they keep repeating that, trying to get us to appreciate you have two mortal selves. One of them is just nothing but mortal, the adjuster self. The other mortal self, though, is potentially immortal. So, you know, to try to foster the growth of that potentially immortal self. Well, how do I do that? Not through quantity of thinking, through quality of thinking. That will make that self that's going to potentially go on get grown. So again, That's the mode you want to be in. They see that's why they're doing that. They're trying to get you to let go of just all the immediate doings of this self and trying to desperately hold on to this self. Set your sights higher. Work on storing your treasures in heaven. You know, quality thinking can be turned into soul bricks. That's storing your treasures in heaven. Give the adjuster something to copy. Quality thinking, reflective thinking. Yeah.
Also, just like we were talking about earlier, about, you know, Jesus set the sights high enough to the highest with, you know, to have a talk with my Father in heaven. If you're starting any trains of thought, like philosophically thinking about something, mm-hmm. you can use the various bits in the Arantia book as, you know, touchstones to, you know, they have that high level of thinking right. and then project out to there and then, you know, have the mother show you the steps along the way.
No, that's a really good point, and that feeds into what John's earlier question, you know, kind of, you know, that's one of the reasons they've given us the revelation is if you precisely focus in on what the revelation is saying, not just speed read it and feel things in passing, you know, but if you force yourself to focus in and try to understand, what does this confusing sentence mean? See, in order to sort that out, you're not going to do it by brute force quantity thinking. You're going to have to step back and get a bigger picture to see that sentence anew. So, I mean, that's just a simple technique. If you just take the light and cultivating a precise unpacking relationship with the revelation, that's going to foster this growth. Now, wait, let's keep going here. Yeah, so we don't run out of time here.
Your own races of surviving mortals belong to this group of the ascending sons of God. You are now planetary sons, evolutionary creatures derived from the life carrier implantations and modified by the Adamic life infusion. Hardly yet ascending sons. But you are indeed sons of ascension potential, even to the highest heights of glory and divinity attainment. And this spiritual status of ascending sonship you may attain by faith and by free will cooperation with the spiritualizing activities of the indwelling adjuster. When you and your adjuster are finally and forever fused, when you two are made one, even as in Christ Michael, the Son of God, and the Son of Man are one, and then in fact have you become the ascending sons of God.
Okay, so you know, you can see that's kind of the point of that paragraph is just to give you a little synopsis of the whole picture. And so they start you with some facts. You are now planetary sons. Evolutionary creatures derived from the life carrier implantations, in other words, single-celled plants in shallow seas, and modified by the Adamic life infusion, well, a tiny little bit, hardly yet ascending sons. You know, as we often irreverently refer to that fact, blobs of protoplasm are hardly ascending sons of God. Okay? So, but it is a solemn and supernal fact, as I said above, that a blob of protoplasm can become an ascending son of God. That is a pretty profound fact. You know, and all you have to do is, you know, you may attain by faith and by free will cooperation. You know, and that cooperation, again, is that, you know, supplying the favorable conditions. You know, don't try to do something with the adjuster. It's like, I know how this should work. Okay, I've got an agenda, adjuster, and I'm in it. Are you in it? It's about you humbly trying to allow the adjuster to do what it knows to do that you can't know to do. So cooperation with the adjuster is supplying favorable conditions. Man cannot cause growth. You know, so don't try to leverage off this revelation of that there's an adjuster in you to grow yourself. Okay. It's all about humility, just letting it come naturally, even as Christ Michael, know, is the Son of God and the Son of Man. That couldn't come together if he hadn't done that full humility Son of Man phenomenon. And maybe just, you know, it occurs to me, I'll remind you again, you know, when you're reading the last paper in the book, you start reading that paper and you notice a very strange fact about that paper. You're reading and reading and reading, and you're still in the preface. You're reading and reading, and I'm still in the preface. You're reading, and what is up with this preface? What, I mean, isn't it totally inappropriate to call something that's, you know, that many pages long a preface? Okay, why is the preface to the first section in that paper so long? Do you remember what the title of the first section is? Jesus, M-dash, the man. Right? Mm-hmm. Jesus, the man. Okay? Did he get to be Jesus, the man, you know, a true man? By one day just doing that fiat road to Damascus thing like Paul? No. That's not the faith of Jesus. That's the faith of Paul. The faith of Jesus has no suddenlies in it. The faith of Jesus is a long, long, gradually, a long, gentle preface, finally leading up to Jesus, the man. There's a very, you know, very great distortion, you know, that's been woven into Christianity, thinking that in order, the proper faith is, you know, is for you to emulate Paul. No. Emulate Jesus. Don't be the rabbit, be the tortoise. Yeah, or the hare. You know, don't be the hare, be the tortoise. do that gradually thing. That's the faith of Jesus. And it'll get you there. Those two will come together. You know, see, so again, you know, just saying that, see, oh, now I'm starting to appreciate even more why they stress so much everything except the adjuster. You know, that Michael didn't do gradually because of one of the most experienced adjusters, you know, in the universe of universes. He did the gradually because he was a true man, a faith son of God.
That's what we do.
And the adjuster took care of the details of making that earnest effort as a faith son having all those incredible consequences.
That's what he said when he came down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let the adjuster work out the details day by day.
Right, right. See, just that's what's being stressed here.
I wish he'd work out my details.
Well, look at that. The next sentence starts with the details, so maybe it's All right. Okay, let's keep going here.
The details of the adjuster career of indwelling ministry on a probationary and evolutionary planet are not a part of my assignment.
Darn it, they're not going to explain the details to you.
The elaboration of this great truth embraces your whole career. I include the mention of certain adjuster functions in order to make a replete statement regarding adjuster fused mortals. These indwelling fragments of God are with your order of being from the early days of physical existence through all of the ascending career in Nebanon and Orvantan and on through Avona to paradise itself. Thereafter, in the eternal adventure, this same adjuster is one with you and of you.
Notice the challenge he's doing there. Okay. We're always, you know, because we're quantity driven, we're looking for big, huge piles of details. Okay? You know, we would especially love, you know, for him to launch into a 20-page, you know, dissertation that we could try to get into all the minutiae of and learn the precise techniques of adjuster association and, right? No. And yet, what does he say? Yeah, I mean, what should you be looking for? Would replete be adequate? Something even more than complete? I would think that replete, look what he says. See, He's going to say just a few things in order to make a replete statement regarding a just refused mortals. These little scraps, seeming scraps that are here, are all you need to know. It's just what we were saying before. Okay? Don't worry about the adjuster thing. That takes care of itself. You don't need to know any of the details. And if you start fixating on all those details, thinking you can cause growth by having a detailed knowledge about adjuster association, all kinds of techniques, you know, you're actually short-circuiting. You're thwarting it. Guaranteed that there will be no growth if you get into that mode. Okay? Is the mighty messenger wise? Does he not know what we will have a tendency to do when we read this book and learn about adjusters? We'll all launch into endless workshops on the details of adjusters.
Right? Right.
So he's saying no. I mean, just the basic facts, and from your perspective, that's replete. It's all you need. It's transcomplete. It's replete. It's all you need to know. Let God take care of it. I mean, it goes right back to Abraham with Machiavelli and Melchizedek. Just do the faith thing, and God will take care of everything else, he said. Machiavelli said to Abraham. Man, this is what we've been reading. Be a genuine faith son of God, and you will inexorably go up that long sloping ramp that true son did, and you will get to the same point that Jesus did. Yeah. So just let the adjuster and all of these mysterious physics of spirit, you know, ministries and whatnot do their thing. You just be a humble, sincere faith son of God and do your best to have quality of thinking.
I'm trying to get out of the way.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Is there anything else there? You know, other than just, you know, notice how he made a point of burning, you know, a number of words to stretch it all out, ascending career in Nebadon and Orvanton and on through Avona to paradise itself. You know, you know, he spent that much space in the book just to make that point. That's like, well, okay, that might get me, you know, to the first mansion world, but, you know, no, it'll take you all the way to the endless cycles of eternity. So he's trying to just stress that. Just do the simple little thing, and the whole thing to eternity will take care of itself. All right?
These are the mortals who have been commanded by the Universal Father, be you perfect, even as I am perfect. The Father has bestowed himself upon you, placed his own spirit within you. Therefore, does he demand ultimate perfection of you? The narrative of human ascent from the mortal spheres of time to the divine realms of eternity constitutes an intriguing recital not included in my assignment. But this supernal adventure should be the supreme study of mortal man.
Again, I mean, in just a few words, I mean, this is like huge stuff. Okay, so you know, let this sink in. So invoke that classic line from Matthew, be you perfect, even as I am perfect. Okay, I'm with you. I'm setting my sights for that. Okay, the Father has bestowed himself upon you, placed his own spirit within you. Okay. Now, do you have logical acumen? Are you using your first cosmic intuition and genuine deductive reasoning that can stem from that logical recognition so that you understand what follows? Why they italicized therefore? Are you capable of therefore-ing the previous clause? Or are they the two clauses disjoint? Do you see how what the first clause demands? Therefore, does he demand ultimate perfection of you? not finite perfection, not supreme affection, perfection, not absolute perfection, ultimate perfection. The kind of stuff that's at eternity through four absolute ages, you know, up through four levels of ultimate personality activity and seven levels of absolute, you know, nature and, okay. Now, and he doesn't desire that, he demands it. Okay. Are you ready to share the inner life with God? Not merely goodness. Goodness doesn't demand anything of you. That's why people love it. That's why they love to be spiritual, not religious. Because goodness makes no demands on you. God doesn't just make demands, God makes ultimate demands. Now, that sounds scary. But again, can you put time into your picture? Okay, he doesn't demand ultimate perfection tomorrow. Okay, but he does demand ultimate perfection. Okay, so you need to be putting your all into this quality of thinking effort. What he demands is so beyond anything that even the revelators can imagine. No divine counselor can even remotely imagine what ultimate perfection is like. That's so beyond them. So, you know, you just need to set your efforts on the having the highest level of quality possible that you can imagine being brought in any given moment. Remember what they say up in the religion papers. You know, you need to really strike your faith grasp upward, not just to values, but to supreme values. It's like, well, I don't really know what supreme is, because you've been stressing a lot, Chris, that that's something really transcendent. Doesn't matter how falsely you label something supreme. Don't be satisfied with anything except what you think you probably ought to call that. You got, well, this is pretty valuable. Oh, but that's more valuable. And I think that's even more valuable. I'm going to call that supreme values, and I'm going to go for that. You know, go from good to better to best, you know, in your discrimination, and strike for the best, not what's good enough for government work. Right? Right? As the old expression goes. Okay, see, so that... But you see what they're, you know, the thing that they're, you know, they're doing more than just sort of commanding this. They want you to deduce this. They don't want you to be, just hear them order you, you know, into this mode, you know, decree it. They want you to logically deduce this. Therefore, to appreciate the fact of what God has given you, and it's like, okay, that's it. Therefore... Okay, to him whom much is given is much expected.
Here again, you know, here's an opportunity to exercise humility.
Yeah.
Because just because I'm a son of God doesn't mean I'm perfect. You know, I mean, even though he told me to be perfect,
yeah,
even as I am perfect. I mean, it's not something that, as you mentioned a minute ago, it's not something you are going to necessarily achieve. It's more... the desire of achieving it. It's more the...
You can probably quote some passages in the book to tell you that point blank, right? It's right. Not so much what you are, but, you know, what you're... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Verse 112.
Right. It's what you're becoming, right? So that's all we're talking about, is just using your personality to have foresight. See, it takes foresight to do this therefore thing. Yeah. You have to go see beyond. See, it's like, where does that take me? Here, therefore... You know, follow that forward, you know, and set your sights on that remotest horizon that your personality can project forward. And don't be satisfied until you get to that horizon.
Well, when you, you know, really get a good handle on the book and you understand this career that's in front of you, and the fact that the way to be perfect is all set, you know, set forth. There's, you know, and you've got to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And the joy of going through it really kind of helps coming from this, the worst planet in the universe.
Or so it seems, anyway.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, you just sit there and say, geez. But I think it's so encouraging, so intriguing. I mean, I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, I'm hoping that we can be excited at the same time that we're facing the facts, you know, and
yeah, right. Well,
you know,
but you can't get
I mean, if you want
down in the negative and say, right. Oh gosh, I'm not going to be good enough, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I don't think.
But they're trying to point out if you want to be genuinely excited and not just, you know, falsely amping yourself up, you know. Religionists love to whip themselves up in a fervor over some trivial little thing so that they can feel like they've, you know, they're really doing something sincere and dedicated. It's like, well, if you're going to get yourself all excited, you know, base it upon something worthy, something significant, something weighty, not some triviality in your doctrine. Okay, and, you know, like you were saying there, John, you know, that whole universe career, I mean, you know, that's a pretty strong statement too, but this supernal adventure should be not, you know, it'd be really great if it was, but it should be the supreme study of mortal man. Okay, how much time do you devote to reflecting on the details of the ascension career every day? Is it your supreme study? Or is it something you do occasionally when you get 5 minutes once a year, you know, after you've, you know, handled, you know, your Facebook page or something. Right. all right. That, you know, the fifth epical revelation allows us to finally study what should be the supreme study. That was never possible before. So there's great potential. If humans are actually study what they can now study, it could really transform the world. You know, long centuries, celestials have said, you know, it should be the supreme study of them. I wonder if one day someone will make it possible for them to study that. It's come to pass in your lifetime. You can study this now. Yeah. How sincerely, earnestly do you take this revelation?
We can study it.
Right.
Challenge anybody that thinks they've gotten up to that before they go off, you know, lose their first love and into all these other things, you know.
Right. Yeah, and just
you know, there's a lot of longtime readers that know the book reasonably well. They can tell you the facts.
Mm-hmm.
But then their hearts go out because they aren't challenged by the highest truth coming down from the very top of infinity.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and like I've tried to point out, that whole being to really get your orientation upward. Religion in and of itself just takes you sideways. Remember, in order to go up, you have to find a superadditive consequence, which means you got to find two things in the plane that you're on. One of those things is religion, as Jesus taught us. The other thing is true science. You've got to find true science and true religion, and you've got to encompass them and get a super additive consequence, something that takes you up. Right? And like John just pointed out, you follow that up, and where do you get at that pinnacle? You get to the masters of philosophy. That is the upward direction through philosophy, true philosophy, not, you know, foolish, you know, ideological doctrines, you know, flying under the banner of so-called philosophy. True philosophy, the super additive consequence of true science and true religion. Okay, so he's using just a very few words, and he's doing the replete thing. Remember, see, that's why I'm kind of stressing this. Think about how much he's saying with just a few words.
Fusion with a fragment of the Universal Father is equivalent to a divine validation of eventual paradise attainment. And such adjuster-fused mortals are the only class of human beings who all traverse the Havona circuits and find God on paradise. To the adjuster-fused mortal, the career of universal service is wide open. What dignity of destiny and glory of attainment await every one of you? Do you fully appreciate what has been done for you? Do you comprehend the grandeur of the heights of eternal achievement which are spread out before you? Even you who now trudge on in the lowly paths of life through your so-called veil of tears?
You know, they often do this, you know, as a way of getting a poetic flourish at the end, is going to, you know, interrogative mode like that, you know, putting question marks in. You know, they're trying to get you to challenge, you know, to think about those questions sincerely, reflect on them. You know, and I, you know, you notice I've been, you know, we've spent, you know, an hour and 45 minutes, you know, just this much. And I'm trying to get to the point where, you know, when you get to this last bit, do you fully appreciate what has been done for you? Right? Just the mere fact of your personality and the recognizing that you're a faithful son of God, do you appreciate how profound a fact that is? What a solemn and supernal fact that is. Right? You know it. Don't just believe it. Don't just feel it. Know it. Internalize it. Get a hold of this. You know, it'll get you focused on the things that you ought to be focused on in your life.
Well, and you wish that so many more people could be.
But if one of us does it,
that's true.
Someone else might notice. Yeah. Right? Because how are you going to ever get anyone else to follow? Is it by precept or example? No, it's by the loyalty that you manifest. If you manifest loyalty to supreme values, that's going to impact someone. And you won't be a single. There'll be two, and then there'll be three, and then there'll be four. But it's got to start with you, not just blabbering about this, but being this. Okay? No amount of talking about these things is going to do anything to help the world. Only if you are an embodiment of this will that begin to change the world.
Jesus had the most effect with those he said the fewest
words. Right, yeah. And by your fruits, they will know you, right? Doesn't matter how much you talk about the Arantia book. Anyone with any discernment looks at your life and goes, really?
You can barely wait to read that one.
Right. Come on, okay?
What was your third wife's name?
They're going to assess you. They're going to assess you. We have to appreciate this. If you're going to put yourself out there, you're going to be assessed. But it's okay. You'll pass the test because you've got something a lot more discriminating assessing you already. If you're, you know, sharing the inner life with God, who demands ultimate perfection of you, you can certainly meet, you know, what those others are going to demand of you. Right? So it's, you know, you don't have to worry about that. You'll be fine. And just, you know, the one last little thing. If you're not familiar, when you see quote-unquote veil of tears, you know, that's not in the Bible. You know, that's just a very, very, very old Christian expression. The veil of tears is, it's not that. It doesn't have to do with going to Oklahoma. you know, it's, I mean, no one really knows where, you know, it goes, you know, definitely back into Jerome and, you know, I mean, it just goes into antiquity. But, you know, but they know how much we think of this life as a veil of tears because we've been indoctrinated into that expression, you know, so-called. You know, is it really a veil of tears? Okay? Or is it a solemn and supernal fact? Which is it? You choose. Yeah. Your life will change if you recognize it's a solemn and supernal fact instead of believing it's a veil of tears. That'll change everything.
Every day it's a veil of tears. Right. But if you'll buy this, we'll fix you right up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Take this course.
Right. Veil of tears belief is great for marketing. Yeah. You know, because those who believe they're wallowing in the veil of tears are always looking for something that will what?
Oh, yeah, I got something.
What's that? What's that thing that they always say in those commercials? You think about it?
Change everything.
Peace of mind. Okay. Peace of mind. You'll pay anything for peace of mind.
Yeah. You can buy it on Amazon.
Yeah. You know, just, you know, invert your pockets and give them the lint and everything for peace of mind. Right?
Well, the answer is right there, the career of universal service. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, I envision, you know, when you finally get to be a finale and everything, I mean, I think your whole life, you know, ends up being, it's all about service. It's all about the relationships that you have is all about service, one form or another.
And to genuinely serve, is it about quantity? Or quality. You know, genuine service is personal. It's a quality fact. It's not how many soup bowls you fill. Right? It's if you touch one person genuinely, personally, that's infinitely more significant than just actually, materially touching 500,000.
And it becomes a frame of mind.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do the sun fuse because this will work perfectly as a dividing point here. Because the sun fuse are really sort of an asterisk, you know, attached to the father fusers. So that'll be a great place to stop after this section.
8. Sun fused mortals. While practically all surviving mortals are fused with their adjusters on one of the mansion worlds, or immediately upon their arrival on the higher Marantia spheres, there are certain cases of delayed fusion, some not experiencing this final surety of survival until they reach the last educational worlds of the universe headquarters. And a few of these mortal candidates for never-ending life utterly fail to attain identity fusion with their faithful adjusters.
Okay. So this is a... you know, the one spot where you get this little tidbit thrown in, where they say, okay, fuse with their adjusters on one of the mansion worlds or immediately upon the arrival on the higher Marantia spheres. Remember how even though we haven't officially gotten to the spirit-fused mortals, we've already talked about this, about how a spirit-fused mortal fuses immediately, you know, with that spirit fragment upon resurrection. And you'll see they just said it always works like that. Okay, why is that? You know, the fact they stress it should get you thinking. It's like, okay, so why is it that it's immediately upon... Okay, remember, you have 570, right, separate Marantia forms that's going to be your body. As you go from the first mansion world to Salvington. It's a 570-step staircase. And on each step of the staircase, you have a different Marantia body. The early ones are literally different. They have to, you have to die. They toss out the old one and give you a brand new one. But after the first ones on the mansion worlds, then you're rekeyed, in process. You don't actually have to lose consciousness. But, you know, it's a distinctly different Marantia form in each one. See, so why do you, why, if they're going to fuse at some point up the staircase, why is it immediately in your beginning? I'm one of those. Because you are given that new form when you get there. It has bigger space. The reason you weren't fusing before is because there wasn't room for you to do that final synchronization process. You know, you may have been a first circler for ages upon ages, okay, but you haven't fused because that final synchronization process, you literally didn't have enough elbow room in the body you were in. They take you up a notch, blow the doors off the old body, and get yourself a much bigger space to work in, and fuse just like that. See, so it's a technical thing. You didn't have the room to fuse before. You know, so it's always, once they give you that wider space to work in, that it can happen. But, of those 570, obviously most of them are up there at the top. You have 491 of them. Yeah, up there at the local universe headquarters level, every one of the sub-satellites and satellites and then Salvington itself, some of them, they've been, so can you imagine how long it takes to finally get to Salvington, be a citizen of Salvington, and you've been a first circler for how many eons, now? and you still haven't fused. Yep.
Well, because at least in potential, we could fuse in this world.
Right. Or in this world. Right. Potentially, yep.
That means in potential, we have a lot more room now than we will in a Maruncha body. In a Maruncha body, it'll be a fairly defined space we'll be dwelling in.
Well, see, you know, I don't want to go off too much on that, but see, I said what I said because you're thinking, it's like, well, I mean, how can you fuse it all here? Because it seems, wouldn't this be the smallest space? And don't they talk about adjusters being imprisoned because it's such a small space? And, you know, they got a straitjacket on them in such a small space. Well, okay, see, there's a relativity. But see, you know, what they're saying is everyone is different. Everyone needs different size space.
Doesn't mean Enoch.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that somehow Enoch had a vastly bigger space. He was one of the beings that can fuse in a smaller space.
Okay.
See? Remember, the supremacy is, you know, is not one size fits all. There's every different flavor. Some people are designed so that they can only fuse when they get to the final biggest space possible. They finally get that last body on Salvington, and finally now there's enough space and they fuse. You know, whereas Enoch can feel like, yeah, I'm fused clear back on the first, you know, mansion world as a really low-level mortal. It's all relative. Okay. But that's the mechanics of what's going on there. Okay, so what about these people that, you know, they're wandering around Salvington, they've done everything and still nothing. So okay, now what?
Such mortals have been deemed worthy of survival by the adjudicational authorities. And even their adjusters, by returning from Divinington, have concurred in their ascension to the mansion worlds. Such beings have ascended through a system, a constellation, and through the educational worlds of the Salvington Circuit. They have enjoyed the 70x7 opportunities for fusion, and still have been unable to attain oneness with their adjusters.
Okay, everything is straightforward there, except the delightful use of the Bible. Now, if you're familiar with the Jesus Papers, okay, you know that they even have a footnote about this issue and explaining that, you know, technically that passage, you know, should be translated 77. Okay, 70 times and 7. So, what's going on here? Why did they take the improper translation 70 times 7? Okay, I mean, and you know, and if you look in the various translations of the Bible, you know, the old ones will definitely say 70 times 7. You know, but at some point you get a modern enough one and it'll finally say 77 in it. You know, because even the scholars have eventually figured this out, that it's supposed to be translated 77 and not 70 times 7. So why on earth would they perpetuate a falsehood, an error, whatever? What's going on here? You know, how dare they, you know, give me the... you know, think about it. They're going, you know that improper translations you guys have of 70 times 7? Multiply that out. What do you get? What's 70 times 7? Oh, the number of worlds around Salvington. See, by using that incorrect translation, it reminds you of what they were just saying. You've gone through all 490 worlds. See, so even an improper translation can be used in a truthful mode. If you're a fact finder rather than a truth seeker, that's an abomination to you. But if you know the truth and you're actually genuinely seeking the truth, you should be delighted with, oh, isn't that clever? It doesn't matter.
I didn't even know
it doesn't matter if we translate things correctly or incorrectly, they can still use it. All things can be taken to good.
Is our barometer going to be the tradition of men or the tradition of God?
Yeah.
You know?
See, so,
what did Jesus say when he told Peter about how many times he forgave? Did he say 70?
70 times in 7.
Say that?
70 times in 7, right? He said 77. See, yeah, you know. But we even, you know, we've all been so steeped in that. If you have any Bible history, you know, Christian history, that you can read the Jesus Papers 500 times and you'll still hear 70 times 7 every time that's read. You know, you won't even see the "and" in there, because right? You're, yeah, you'll. I think If I remember right, I think even the Revised Standard still had 70 times 7. I think you have to get to the new Revised Standard.
But the point is, it's not 70 times 7. The point is, you just don't stop.
Yeah. The point here is, the actual 70 times 7, 490, really works in this context. Right. Wow. Okay.
It's just like they give us the right answer mathematically without telling you. They're revealing, something.
Okay, so just sound... I'm stressing, I'm trying to get people to get into the proper spirit. Stop thinking so factually and simplistically about the revelation. All right.
When it becomes apparent that some synchronizing difficulty is inhibiting father fusion, the survival referees of the Creator Son are convened. And when this court of inquiry, sanctioned by a personal representative of the Ancients of Days, finally determines that the ascending mortal is not guilty of any discoverable cause for failure to attain fusion, they so certify on the records of the local universe and duly transmit this finding to the Ancients of Days. Thereupon does the indwelling adjuster return forthwith to Divinington for confirmation by the personalized monitors, and upon this leave-taking, the Marantia mortal is immediately fused with an individualized gift of the spirit of the Creator Son.
Okay, so just a couple things there. It's all pretty straightforward, giving you the specifics. But you know, notice that they said that precise term of some synchronizing difficulty.
Yeah.
Okay, they're trying to get you in the proper space. You know, they're not a fourth circler or a third circler or a second circler. I mean, you know, they've been a first circler for a very, very, very long time. Okay, the only thing left is that final synchronizing process. You know, as a first circler, you know, think of, you know, the easiest way to think of it is, and this is why they give you the circle analogy, you know, tied to Havona. You know, if the adjuster is this cylindrical rod coming down from infinity, the tip of which is inserted in your mind, you know, you have that circular cross section of that rod, and you're on a seventh circle way out here, and then you go to a six, and you're a little closer to the circumference of that. You come all the way in. When you're a first circler, that's when, you know, you're literally, there's no gap between you and the outside boundary of the adjuster. You've wrapped yourself intimately around the adjuster as a first circler. That's why there can be communication. Okay? You got to be actually touching it. But there's a final step where you're rotating your relationship. You know, just think about it like tumblers in a lock or something. You know, I mean, you have to find the right synchronization. You got to rotate around. It's like, where is it you lock on here? You know, and finally you find it. Okay? So it's that final process. You're in intimate contact with the adjuster, but you can't figure out how to orient yourself to lock on. All right, and then the one little technical thing that they don't, you know, fully explain here, but we've talked about it. Remember when they say fused with an individualized gift of the spirit of the Creator Son, okay? Again, not literally. You can't walk up with a rock hammer and knock off a chip of Michael and stick it into someone. He's not individuatable like that. How do they technically do that? Remember how you've got the reflective mother spirits of the super universe. You can fragment the spirit nature of the reflective mother spirits, and those reflective mother spirits can perfectly synchronize with a Creator Son. Remember how you even have the Sakanafim that are the voices of the Creator Sons because of that reflectivity synchronization like that? And so the reflective mother spirits, you know, as one mother, you know, there's seven spirits, but one mother, a fragment of that, you know, is attuned to a particular Creator Son, and that spirit fragment is bestowed. Because they're going to ascend, you know, where their ceiling is the super universe rather than the spirit fusers where the ceiling is the local universe. You know, so it's obviously if their ceiling is the super universe, they must be of the mother of that super universe. So that's, you know, technically how that's done. All right.
Much as the Marantia spheres of Nebadon are shared with the spirit-fused mortals, so do these sun-fused creatures share the services of Orvantan with their adjuster-fused brethren who are journeying inwards toward the far distant Isle of Paradise. They are truly your brethren, and you will greatly enjoy their association as you pass through the training worlds of the super universe.
Just go ahead and read the last one, too.
Sun-fused mortals are not a numerous group, there being less than 1 million of them in the super universe of Orvantan. Aside from residential destiny on Paradise, they are in every way the equals of their adjuster-fused associates. They frequently journey to Paradise on super universe assignment, but seldom permanently reside there, being, as a class, confined to the super universe of their nativity.
Okay, so now, just one little last technical thing there. You know, so it seems like they're opening up the door. Okay, they frequently journey to Paradise. Okay, well, that's going out of the womb of the reflective mother's spirits. Okay, but you notice that they finished by saying confined still. So, obviously, if they're going to go out of the super universe, they must be modified in some way so they can, they don't come mindedly unplugged when they go out of the, you know, the domain of the reflective mother's spirits. They're modified in the same way you will be when you leave the super universe and head towards Havona. But all that journey through Havona and on Paradise, you know, and getting to onto Paradise, you're still in a mode where until something else is done to you, you couldn't go out to another super universe. In order for you to go out to another super universe, there's a subsequent modification that's made to you that they talk about on the Isle of Paradise, so that you are attuned to the mother womb of the collective super universe level, the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. See, these are never, that is not done to them. They stay where, and we can't get it, the details are very complicated of how you kind of stay in this confined to the super universe mode and yet go through Havona into Paradise and everything. That's a technicality of unpacking the pattern universe, the central universe. But just, you know, there's a mechanism established there where, you know, you can, you kind of can still be like that confined to the super universe, but can walk through there and back. But they have to come back out to their super universe. You know, even though they actually are on the Isle of Paradise, they can't decide they're going to go out to another super universe. They're not able to do that. Okay, so just that little technical detail is in there. And that, like I said, that's the way you will be. This special way is prepared for you to get through Paradise. And it's not actually until you're a Finaliter that you get this new modification to where you can go out to another super universe. You know, and you aren't, see, technically going into the mind womb of one of those other groups of seven reflective mother spirits. You're above all the reflective mother spirits in that higher mind womb to do that. All right, so the next time we'll get into the spirit-fused mortals, and you know, I don't know. There's a lot we might do. We might just finish it up next time. We'll see how that goes. But let's take a moment to. Yeah, let's reflect on, you know, as they said there, you know, about how, you know, it should be this supernal adventure should be the supreme study of mortal man. Maybe that'd be a good point to just reflect on for a moment here.